And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox, and boy, do we have a great show today. I'm really super excited about it, and sometimes the court system really comes through for people. Sometimes there is a little piece of justice, and we just watched that come down in Lihue a little more than an hour ago, and we're going to be talking about that case with the Hyatt versus the Hawaii Dairy Farms, and the Department of Health were in there. Very, very interesting. We also have a good friend of mine here from Permaculture of North America, and we will be also hearing later in the show about the Ridge Development in Hanalei. It's another project by the same investor, Pierre Midiar.
I saw that. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's going to come up. And then there's some stuff on the legislation today about the pesticides over on Oahu.
Wow, good stuff.
Good stuff. So Eileen and Bridget are in the studio with me here, and I want to just say that Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store, Betty Jean Nativio, and Howley Girl.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Betty Jean Nativio, artist for hire, teaching both art and cooking, including the School of Chocolate Art for all ages and abilities. Multi-art mediums, including reverse glass painting, available for events, signage, custom gifts, and more. More information at BettyJeanNativio.com or 808-652-3781.
Howley Girl Island Suites presents The Tea Room in the Gallery, located in Kinipopo Shopping Center in Kapa'a, offering full-service high tea and desserts. More information at 808-822-2253.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. We really appreciate all the support that we get in here. And, okay.
So you just got back from court.
I just got back from court, and I brought my friends, Bridget Hammerquist and Eileen. Can I ever say your last name?
Ketchloyan.
Ketchloyan. I got to really learn that. They're in here. Bridget, I want to let you break the news. You want to share?
I'd be happy to, Felicia, and thank you for having us. It was a great court hearing. It was very interesting. The judge took his time. Counsel argued longer arguments than usual, as he said. It was a big case. To share with your listeners, the case was filed by the owners of the Grand Hyatt in 2014. Lots of discovery, lots of work has been done by the legal firm on Oahu that has been representing Kawailoa Development, LLC, the owners of the Grand Hyatt property. And Lisa Munger, the lead counsel, and Lisa Bale have been hard at work. We have had a cooperative effort between Friends of Mahalapu and the Kawailoa Development attorneys in that we share information when we learn it. We share discovery, as it should be. And as you may have recalled today in court, Felicia, one of the things Lisa Munger referred to was Judge Kobayashi's order in a recent decision, and that was from Friends of Mahalapu's Clean Water Act case. And she was bringing that to Judge Valenciano's attention, along with many, many wonderful cases that were well-briefed and researched. Wasn't the argument wonderful that Lisa Munger delivered to the court? I mean, it was so articulate.
It was so well done, and why don't you hit? I'm so excited.
Okay.
I want to just say what they all are, but I want to let you hit those key bullet points, because it doesn't really just apply for the dairy situation. You know, what we saw is they were bringing up these other cases like the Super Ferry, and I wrote down the name of the other one, the Umberger case.
Yeah.
Cases set precedent for each other, and,
yes.
and that the dairy is being designed by Group 70, which is the same group that's doing this Princeville Lodge, the development on the ridge here in Hanalei, and the same group that is doing Mauna Kea, the 30-meter telescope area, and they did the whole Mauna Kea master plan. So we're seeing a track of similar challenges in each project that they're doing of not getting deeply involved. So, because right now I can tell that I have listeners from Maui, Oahu, Hawaii. We thank you for listening in. We share this piece of the story with you, and we're also going to be talking about O'okala, the dairy over there on Hawaii Island. So while this is a Kauai-specific case, it is sets a precedent in Hawaii. Is that correct? Unless it goes to the Supreme Court, is it not a precedent?
It's not legally a precedent until it goes up to a higher level, but it is persuasive authority. They do look between the superior courts. They do consider determinations that are made. But in this case, where they were relying on citizens for the preservation of Kohala, that was a Big Island case, mm-hmm. a Supreme Court case, they were citing precedent. So this judge's decision today was clearly based on Hawaii State precedent, and Kawailoa Development LLC was a case filed on behalf of the Hyatt against the Hawaii Dairy Farms build-out and effort to put an industrial dairy at Mahalapu on Kauai. The exciting thing today was that the judge stood up for the law and said, no matter what the outcome of the review process by agencies, agencies should not issue permits or approvals until they have all the environmental information before them that's required under the law. Now, does every case require an environmental assessment or environmental impact? No. I know Amy Hennessy suggested at one time in the press that this is going to have far-reaching ramifications for small farmers, etc. Not so at all.
No. This had nothing to do with that.
No. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that they have an industrial dairy proposed with a massive wastewater treatment unit, and they have a whole section in their waste management plan devoted to that wastewater treatment unit. And they have a common plan of development. That was the finding by our federal judge. And Judge Valenciano said, you can't get approvals for a project like this. Permits cannot issue before the environmental assessment required under the law is done. And the law involved is the Hawaii Revised Statute Section 343, which specifically says that if you have a wastewater treatment unit as part of your development, whether it's a human wastewater treatment unit or one for a farm, an animal waste treatment unit, if its waste exceeds that which would be the equivalent to 25 households, it has to go through an environmental assessment or an environmental impact process. And in this case, I know from correspondence I've read that the owners of the Hyatt started by asking them nicely, please do this first. We're concerned about the environmental impact. But Group 70 has a tendency to want to proceed without permits.
That's exactly right.
And they did it. The court, in the Supreme Court case, I know in the 30-meter telescope, set aside and vacated all permits issued at that juncture for the failure to follow correct administrative process. And in essence, Judge Valenciano, who sits as the presiding judge for the State Environmental Law Court, so he has a very responsible position, and you could tell he spent a lot of time thinking about the case. He had papers and cases all over his desk when he issued his ruling. He let the attorneys argue. He engaged them during the argument. He asked questions. You could tell it was a real well-reasoned decision. And he came down on the side of the law and said, look, this statute exists for a reason. It exists to protect the environment and the public. It doesn't make sense that you start building out and developing your plan when you haven't complied with the law. If you start complying with the law down the road after you've already gotten permits or approvals, he said that's in a sense just a pro hoc act.
Rationalization.
Rationalization. That was the word he used. That's right. It's a rationalization of this prior approval that was not based on information. So he said, I want the information obtained. I want it put before the agencies. I want to know that their decision is based on actual facts that have been gathered.
Right. Not just justifying the permits that were already there. And so here's two other points that were big takeaways for me. Here's a key word that was used, segmentation.
Yes.
And so segmentation is what happened with Standing Rock. It's certainly what happened with the 30-meter telescope. And the judge was calling it out that what the dairy farm is trying to do is going each little segment of what they were doing, saying, well, it's not that big of an impact. So when they say, well, we're only looking at this wastewater treatment piece, and so we don't have to get an environmental assessment ahead of time because it's just this little piece. And then the argument that was put by the plaintiff was, no, it's a dairy. You wouldn't have a wastewater treatment facility if there wasn't a dairy right there.
Right.
Let's be real. Let's be honest. And so that's what happened with Standing Rock is there was never an environmental impact statement on that entire pipeline. They just take little pieces. They take small enough pieces to say, well, there's no impact from this piece. And what happened with the super ferry, and the super ferry discussion came up in this, mm-hmm. is that the only thing that had to be looked at, not calling it a project, but just saying we're only going to do an assessment on this ramp that the cars are going to drive off the boat on, instead of looking at what is the impact of having a ferry system between the islands. So they were able to circumvent and segment that process. It was a pretty complicated argument how she brought the super ferry into this, but obviously both Lisa Munger, the attorney, and then Randall Valenciano, the judge, they both were part of that particular case. But so segmentation, breaking things up to be small enough that you don't really have to ask permission in a meaningful way, that was one piece that I saw was a very big part of this. Eileen?
That was also in our Clean Water Act. In the ruling, our Judge Kobayashi put down
and
was that it was a whole project that needed to be looked at, that you couldn't look at like they were trying to do. We have an agricultural exemption, so we could do all these things. But she ruled that it was
a common plan of development.
Yes.
Common plan of development.
So when you're saying ours, that means the Friends of Mahalapu. The Friends of Mahalapu mm-hmm. are concerned about the dairy being put in there kind of recklessly. It's not that people don't like dairies. It's that they don't like that kind of dairy in that place, that close, that right on top of the water system. Some people don't like dairies anywhere, but the argument is it's in a dangerous place to put it. And then so as you were talking about this exception, there are exceptions to 343.
Yes, there are. But not if it's going to involve a statutorily determined environmental impact. And in this case, a wastewater treatment unit is a statutorily determined environmental impact.
So in regular speak, that means there's a law.
There's a law.
Right, right. The statute means a law.
And the dairy didn't see fit to follow it, and they've not seen fit to do much of anything that cares about the environment. I mean, the fact that they didn't know their soil type when they began grubbing and grading and removing plants from 500 acres and using Roundup on 500 acres more than one time. They hadn't had a soil analysis. They didn't have a hydrologic review beforehand. They didn't know their accurate rainfall readings in there. And they were planning for, and still are, 100% land application of all of their manure and urine. Everything is supposed to stay on the farm in theory, but as dairy scientists told us that we went out and hired and had reviewed the plan, they said there's no way. It's too small an area with too many animals making too much waste. It will not happen. It will not stay on the farm. And eye-opening for us, Felicia, and you referred to it earlier, was we were contacted by people who live on the Hamakua coast of the Big Island in the little town of Ookala, which I actually lived there between second grade and fifth grade. That was our family home in Ookala. So when I was called by somebody, I went, "Where are you calling from?" "Ookala. I used to live there."
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "Well, we found your website, friendsofmahalapu.org. And we said, "Really?" They said, "Yeah, you guys got to keep fighting." I said, why are you saying this? Why are you calling us?" And he said, "Because we have the big dairy here, and we are all sick and suffering. We can't sleep at night. The stench is terrible. Everybody closes their doors and windows. It gets us up. It wakes us up from a sound sleep. We have sore throats. We have eyes that burn." He said, "You must fight. Don't let it happen there." Well, the board for Friends of Mahalapu voted that we should reach out to them, and they asked us to attend their community meeting, and we went last week. And I know I shared with you, Felicia, a lot of the things that we found, but it was really horrific. I mean, horrific. It's like our worst fears of what will happen at Mahalapu were right in front of our eyes. They're couldn't believe it.
They're manifesting there. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And in the studio with me is Bridget and Eileen from Friends of Mahalapu. And we are just coming right straight from a court case. Do we call it that, a court case?
It's a Superior Court summary judgment motion where a judgment was entered today in favor of the owners of the Grand Hyatt.
And who was the judge?
Judge Valenciano.
Randall Valenciano. And
yes.
And so you guys responded to Ookala, and their dairy is also an Ulupono dairy. Is that correct?
No, it's actually... Okay. No, it's not. It's owned by...
The Whitesides.
Yes. Derek Whiteside, and he's in Idaho or Utah. And then Riley Smith is an owner who lives somewhere on the Big Island. So it's co-owned. But here's the thing we found out by talking to the community there is they've been now starting to dig because of all, I mean, they've got manure floating into their backyards. And we've looked into it. There is no NPDES permit on file for Big Island Dairy. None. There's no environmental assessment. There's no environmental impact statement. There's nothing. These guys just went in, and here's the really sad thing, Felicia.
Mm-hmm.
They lease state land from the Department of Agriculture, from Scott Enright, the head of the Agricultural Development Corporation, signed a lease and allowed this dairy to operate and violate all the laws of the state of Hawaii when it comes to what they needed to put in place and determine the environmental impact. So nothing was done. I think I shared with you there was more than two times that the State Department of Health has been out there between July of 2014 and February of this year. And in March, they came back again, and every single time the Department of Health has come, they have found horrific problems, waste running freely off the property, waste all over the land on the property, a stench they verified in the backyards of the Ookala community a mile away, dead cow carcasses laying in an open pit. And this was what really grabbed me as an ex-nurse. And I can't wait to talk to Dr. Berriman, our new director of health on Kauai here. She's great. I've got to ask her. I know this is really dangerous. They have an open pit with dead cows, and the Department of Health documents that the farm manager, Brad Duff, admitted that when it rains, the water comes out of that dead cow pit and sheets, that's a phrase he used, sheets into their lower lagoon, and that water is then used to spray on pasture
with
and
the manure.
To run off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've got a call that we're going to take in a second here, but I want to affirm that I saw what you sent me of these...
The pictures,
but the reports from, is that the Department of Health?
Yes. And they took the pictures.
Pictures, and that what we saw in some of those is basically a dry stream bed till it gets to where the effluent is, and then it's like little waterfalls of poo juice coming down.
Right.
And we checked, there was no rainfall that day or the day before.
And that's in there. Aloha, thank you for holding here on the air. Do you have a question for our guests?
Actually, I just want to comment.
Yes?
Has anyone ever lived next to a dairy farm before?
I have.
Besides the carcasses and the stench and the flies and stuff, you know, not one person ever mentioned the sounds that the cows make.
Oh, yeah.
They travel for a mile, and they're so loud. And I just want to bring that to someone else's attention, or everyone's attention for that matter. The sounds, it is unbelievable how loud they could be. Travel for over a mile.
Well, they do
so
cry.
To add to everything else, just to let you know, people out there now on the south side and stuff, not only do they have to deal with all the, you know, overflow and stuff, but also when you have the sounds of the cows, the noise, good luck. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, that mama cows cry.
The stench and everything. So I just want to bring that up.
The cows that I've seen grazing in a pasture are not making any noise. So do you have any idea, are these cows sort of contentedly mooing, or are they suffering in some way and crying?
No.
And that's the whole thing. Is they do everything. I mean, they're going to, I'm sure they're going to inseminate them and, unnatural ways, but cows are extremely loud if you've ever been exposed to them.
I think with 300,
500.
Yeah, this is supposed to be 700 to start to your caller, and it's the separation of the babies, Marshall, right after they're born. And the babies bleat, they scream because they want their moms, and the moms scream
for
them. That's what makes, and they'll cry for days.
Wow.
One person mentioned about the sound, and then when there's no wind and it travels, that's a reason to close your doors and windows themselves so you don't hear it. It's amazing. It's horrifying, too. And like you said, the baby is separated from the mama. It's not a pretty picture.
Well, that's with industrial dairies. When you're dealing with a small dairy, for instance, when doing all the research that we've been doing in Canada, they have 1,200 dairies, and most dairies do not even exceed 100 cows. Some go up to 200. And industrial dairies are just now entering Canada, and the dairy owners there of the small sustainable farms are really trying to fight being taken over by the industrial giants because they graze. There's enough land to safely handle the manure. The babies get to stay with the moms a certain amount of time. They can afford to let them do that. Then they go back to milking the moms, and the babies are fed, are supplemented. And it's not the inhumane process that an industrial dairy goes through, but many of the babies die, and that's why in Ocala they have this open pit. But here's the danger with the OO pit. The reason I want to talk to Dr. Behrman is because when cow carcasses lay in an open pit, it is medically known that a dead animal is really like a giant fertilized petri dish. There's leptospirosis, there's salmonella, there's enterococcus, there's really huge E. coli concentrations, bacteroides, just a whole bunch of bad, bad stuff in this dead cow. And when the farm manager said the water from that pit sheets into the effluent pond, and which is sprayed on the pastures, and the cows then are grazing on grass covered with this kind of water, and the village a mile away is living with that kind of taint in the water. When we help them by doing some water quality testing on March 5th and March 10th, just this year, the microbiologist just tested for three bacteria. All three were way beyond state limit. They were past the number that the Department of Health stops counting at. So they were off the Richter scale. But what else is there? See, you have to send it out to get those kind of tests done, and they become very expensive. But I think that there's people in Ocala now that are really, they were happy to find Friends of Mahalapu. They're happy to find our website. It gave them ideas. They now know who to contact. And I think our Department of Health is dealing with the reality of what we were telling the department we didn't want to happen here.
And I want to give a shout out to Friends of Mahalapu because this is a bunch of citizens, I don't know, 40 to 60 people it seems like.
800.
Oh. 800, but there seems to be a core group.
There are.
40 to 60 people, but who are literally like hawking their houses.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's not minor. And if there wasn't this group, although today's decision, that was the Hyatt. You know, the Hyatt paid for that lawsuit. And what I liked and what the judge said, because what both the Department of Health and definitely the dairy argument was, is, hey, these guys don't belong here anyway. They are a resort on agriculture property. And that's true. They are a resort on agriculture property. But what the judge determined was that doesn't mean that the dairy doesn't have to follow the law.
Well, and to be fair, Felicia, I think we should be fair.
Okay, you might know better.
No,
Bridget's
you're
really
right.
Smart. Okay.
You know, you're right.
She is.
But to be fair, the Hyatt owners did the right thing. Their property used to be agriculture. It wasn't important ag land, and it was on the coast, and they persuaded the county that the property itself, the soil type there, wasn't really so great for agriculture, so they did the right thing, and they had it rezoned. And so they had it rezoned first, and then they developed the Grand Hyatt. And they've been, haven't they been great neighbors? I mean, they take care of the community. They help the kids, the Pop Warner. They employ 1,000 people, puts a lot of bread on the table for a lot of local families. And they're good to visitors. I mean, you can go through their hotel and watch their show there on the terrace and the Seaview Terrace. And there's no charge. You can sit in there and have a soft drink. I mean, you can be an average Joe and luxuriate in a Grand Hyatt, and nobody asks you to leave. They've been very opening and welcoming of the local people. And I think, you know, they've done really well, but they did it legally. They did it legally. And that's the difference. And what the judge said today is what you've been doing, Hawaii Dairy Farms, is you've been ignoring the statute, and you've been getting the Department of Health to be complicit with you and ignore the statute. And he kind of really bawled out the Department of Health, didn't he?
He certainly did, yes. And I was embarrassed for the Department of Health.
Yeah,
so was I, but that's exactly what they are doing, is what they were doing there.
Okay.
Over and over again, like on Ocala.
Yeah, and Ocala, too. They're pulling back, you saw the reports, over 48 pages with 8x10 glossy photographs, and they're not even citing.
Well, that's the thing. It's like when you see that they have it right in their face, like last month, these problems, and then to say, well, all we have to do, and they literally use the words, check the boxes. We have another caller. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Aloha. So my question is, why aren't we talking about the human waste problem being the most likely contributor to these high bacterial counts?
Okay, let's let Bridget speak to that for a moment.
You asked that question. I am so glad, because every time we've tried to engage the Department of Health about the horrible bacteria counts in the Waiopili stream at Mahalapu, they bring up Kaloa Poipu cesspools. And they've said it so many times in the paper and elsewhere that they've made people think there's some basis for their contention, but there isn't. I'm a biologist, and I can tell you from all the reports I've read, prior to the dairies beginning their development in 2014, all the testing on the Waiopili, where it runs out onto the sand at Mahalapu, you know, and goes into the ocean, all of those tests were normal.
But what about...
if it was the cesspools, if the cesspools were contributing, which are nowhere near Mahalapu, because there's no cesspool in Mahalapu, but if they were somehow traveling over, as one of the DOH people said, through karst lava tube formation and tracking to Mahalapu and draining to Mahalapu, whatever they're saying, if that was true, my parents built their home over 50 years ago. I mean, my family's been on this island since before 1960, and those cesspools have been around a long time in Weli Weli Tract and even closer than Kaloa and Poipu, and all that water was still normal through January 2014. No, if it was a cesspool, they would have had an abnormal result sooner than now.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. We have Bridget and Eileen and pretty soon Hannah on the air. And we're right now talking about the human waste. We know there's something else that is causing all that contamination that's in the Waiopili stream, which has incredible amounts. So in Kaloa, we've had some conversation on the air about this. There is some housing that they have a known septic problem. And then we also have learned that Aqua Engineers was broadcasting the human biosolids
That's a different situation.
So let's hear from the caller again. Caller?
Yes, thank you so much, Bridget, for your scientific approach. Now, I'm just a human that poops into either right now a bucket because I'm out on a boat. Mm-hmm. But I take my waste to the appropriate place that I believe is the right place to dispose of it, not just dump it into the water. So I'm living also in a low-income property, and I happen to talk to your mother quite at length while you're in a hearing of some sort about 4 months ago. It's before the holiday.
I don't know. Bridget, is your mother living on the island any longer?
No, my mom died in 2002, and she's buried in Kaloa.
So it must be somebody else's mother.
I apologize for that. I talked to a person that claimed to be a mother of the person that was the attorney, maybe, that was over in the hearings in Honolulu before the holiday. And my concern at that point was at the low-income housing at Hale Ohana on Ohu Street, we had raw sewage pouring onto that property. The whole time I've lived there, probably for many, many, many years previously. The owners of the place are now trying to evict me because I called the health department. Now, what they have to do in order to replace this old septic is a cesspool, you know, concrete cesspool, was dig it down to solid rock, and then for 4 months use a jackhammer on a big crane to bust through this solid rock, trying to find some porous material. So the problem is they have to dig out two whole sides of this poor, you know, they used to be called middle class, local people's house. It's going to cost them $150,000 to replace the septic. They still haven't reached porous land.
So you
they hauled out, and only the time that I was there, because I tried to be away as much as possible. It broke my eardrums. I still have ringing in my ears.
Caller?
It was unbelievable. Okay, so here's the bottom line. They hauled out over 24 big, big trucks load of saturated human waste, rock, and dirt. And they take it down past the old mill. They take it out towards Mahale Pu'u, and they dump it there. Just like they've been dumping all the septic waste and sewage from Lydgate Park and all these other places. And then you talk about Hyatt. We had big, big rains like you're talking about just a few weeks ago. And I was down and the smell was unbelievable. Coming out of their septic...
treatment place?
You know, it was just unbelievable. Where is that going? What are they doing with it? This is the concern.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much for calling those in.
I would just offer, it's going to be 10 times worse with 700 cows leaving their poop on the ground untreated.
Or 2,000 cows.
Or 2,000 cows, their ultimate herd.
But right? Thank you so much, caller. So our caller is bringing something up important, though, and then I've had a number of people confront me with that. When they hear me speaking so much about the dairy, they say, all this resorts and pieces, they have their impacts too. And we all do need to think about our poop and what we're doing. Okay, we have another caller. We'll take him. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
I was asked to call in about 4:30. Is it on the topic of...
You are on the air. Is this Carol Cox?
Yes, it is.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha, how are you, Felicia?
Good. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was calling to discuss with you on the Ocala.
Okay.
What was happening there, and are you on that topic now?
We can talk about that for a few moments. We were talking about that, but that's on the Big Island, and Carol Cox... you do really profound investigative reporting. You are a programmer on Oahu. What station are you on over there?
KWAI 1080 AM.
Okay, and you're an incredibly intelligent man that I have had the honor of being able to work with a handful of times, and I see that you are very effective at, I don't know, you're like an investigator or something. You're very, very good at researching these things. So you have followed this issue a little bit, so can you give us a synopsis of what you are seeing at Ocala and this issue and how it relates to the state?
Well, first of all, what they have quite similar behavior on behalf of the state. You could just simply overlay the state's behavior, whether it's Mahalepu or on the Big Island, the dairy. There's a lot of things that are inadequate. They've allowed activities, they being the state, have allowed activities to go on without permits. They inspect, they document that these things are occurring. They take no action. They don't do any revisits or follow-up. So it just seems as if most of this whole effort, whether it's Mahalapu or Ocala, it's the state allows the parties that are proposing these projects to self-police themselves. And that is plaguing the state right now, especially as it relates to dairies.
Yes, I would agree. We're seeing that in many areas that, you know, if an entity is big enough or rich enough or bringing in ostensibly money, like it's actually a little confusing because this area is going to have like 8 to 10 jobs that they provide. And the 30-meter telescope thing, they pay like $1 a year, you know, until they'll eventually pay $1 million a year. So $1 million a year isn't really very much for something that rents out for like $3 million a night. So we definitely have some challenges on this. Eileen or Bridget, do you have a question for Carol?
I just wanted to ask Carol if you would share with the listeners, when we looked at this effluent pond that's supposed to be taking care of this dairy on the Big Island, Carol, when you were taking pictures of it, how would you describe it?
Well, it seems that it was very up to its capacity. That may be in question, but the appearance, and then some of the inspection reports reflect that there is water in the spillway of one of the lagoons. So it's just waiting for a problem to occur, and I don't think it would take much storm water or runoff to trigger that to create a bigger problem.
And in fact, the spillway had effluent water in it, and the farm manager was saying to us at the meeting later that evening, I don't really think that's getting off the property, but did you hear people testify at the meeting quite to the contrary?
Yeah, there was one gentleman who had a video, and he indicated and shared with the manager, Brad Duff, that, and also Mr. Riley Smith, who was reflecting as a part owner of the dairy in state records, absolutely denied anything, or wouldn't own up to, I should say. They pretended that they didn't really know which points or how it was getting in, or just didn't even know how deep they were or if one particular pond was lying or not. But yep, they've been operating it for approximately 4 years.
So, Carol, did you see where that spillway was going?
Well, it indicated,
from the effluent pond?
It suggests that it runs to the gully, the runoff, but again, wasn't clear. But the state did, in fact, on two separate points there, they have what they call a honey wagon, and the state had traced spillage from that was running into the gulch. And then secondly, the spray off from the gun, or the huge spray gun, irrigation gun that they use to disperse the cow manure, the waste, it was, some of it was running off into the stream, into the gulch.
And Carol, in fact, in that state report, they say that Brad Duff, the manager, was standing with them when they were down at the stream, and they smelled, they said it was brown water that smelled like cow manure. So they actually put that in writing and then went back to Oahu and did nothing. I was just blown away that their reports always described, to a time, every time they wrote about this dairy, they wrote about problems, and then they go back to the office. They don't ever come back to see if that problem is fixed yet. And
and what that does is speaks to the importance of how your organization have and your efforts have been constantly digging and scratching and holding their feet to the fire, because the reality is the State Department of Health has no authority, or what authority that they do have, they're willing to just relinquish that for the sake of politics or whatever, favoritism or what have you. But it leaves a community there in Mahalapu, and as we've seen, it's just complete neglect at Ocala. It's really embarrassing when you look at the status of what the things that are allowed to occur at Ocala or Mahalapu.
And in court,
activities without permits.
In court today, pretty much the Department of Health just owned that. They are saying it's not our job. And in fact, the judge made a good comment about the commercial, which I haven't seen, but where there's a bank being robbed and the security person in there says, well, I'm the security monitor, not the security guard. So they let it happen. In the studio with us also is Hannah from Permaculture of North America, and you have a comment that you want to make?
Well, Carol, actually, I have a question, because, yeah, with permaculture, we try to find ways that the problem can be part of the solution. And I'm just wondering, in your investigations of this dairy farm, have you seen any best practices? Is there anything that they're doing right?
Well, I haven't witnessed any best practices, and that's what I was looking for. They may be there, but listening directly to Brad Duff, as he described the work to remediate at the Ocala, to address the broken drainage pipes or culvert pipes, nothing was really clear. It was mostly half answers. He might know about it, but it didn't have any answers. But they were waiting for the soil and water conservation and other professionals to provide recommendations. So in other words, they've been operating, in my opinion, as a horse before the cart, the cart before the horse situation, where here we are, they're allowed to operate. And the shame of it is that they're a regulatory body. The Department of Health has the authority, the fiduciary responsibility, and all of that, and yet they relinquish that for the sake of, I guess, seeking to build the economy. But the dividends or the cost to the environment and the health of the people is just too costly to be operating so loosely.
It was really,
as we see at both sites.
It was heartbreaking to hear the people talk about. They've actually had people in the community, Felicia, that had to be hospitalized, and they confirmed E. coli, they confirmed C. difficile, they've confirmed staph. Any number of residents have had
impetigo.
They've had wounds on their legs that required packing, irrigation, debridement, and packing, and a drain put in. That's a serious infection.
And these are just residents, not employees.
They don't go on the dairy site. This is just from what's coming
in the ocean, or
it's coming into the in Ocala. It's a community along the coastline, and it's kind of like a drop off. You know, it's about 60 feet from the coastal cliff to the ocean,
uh-huh.
And then there are areas that actually go down to a beach in Ocala, but what happens is the dairy is uphill from them, and there's these natural gulches that drain water off, and one of the gentlemen who attended the meeting, and Carol, I know, interviewed him, he was a civil engineer, and he said something there that really made a light bulb go on in my head. He said the mistake this operation has made, and probably because it didn't have permits or an environmental assessment, is that it opened up all of the sugar infrastructure. It restored the drainage ditches. It fixed the culverts so they could drain. But he said you can't do that where you've got wastewater and manure all over the ground, because by opening up that whole system, which was a system to keep the cane from overflooding, you've now allowed the manure water and the manure to leave the farm. And when you have a animal feed operation with bacteria-laden manure, it's not supposed to go out into the environment because it's considered toxic.
And the Waiopili ditch is somewhat similar, correct?
Correct. In fact, the Waiopili ditch,
which is in Mahalapu.
Right. The dairy people themselves admit that all the drainage ditches on the farm site drain to the Waiopili ditch, which then becomes the Waiopili stream, and it forms this nice little pool and estuary before it goes across the white sand beach at Mahalapu and into the ocean.
So I was listening to some of the dialogue, the meeting that you went to over there on Hawaii Island, and this is another area where our islands with social media and everything else, we're all connecting and we're helping each other. So it's making a big difference. I can't remember her last name. There's a council member over there on the island, Val.
Oh, Poindexter.
Poindexter.
We just met her for the first time.
So she seemed to have a really strong opinion on it. Can you share any of what she had to say?
Yes. Eileen has an email that she wrote to the farm manager, Carol, that we'd like to share with Felicia's listeners. Eileen's going to read it for you.
This is an email from Valerie to Mr. Duff, who is the farm manager.
So she's a councilwoman.
She's a councilwoman.
And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, Felicia and Marshall on Kauai Soapbox. We're talking about dairy.
Mr. Duff, I am writing from my personal email as a member of the O'okala community. I wish I could bottle up the smell that is in my home tonight so that you would know what we have to live with in our community. Literally smells like urine and manure, and a very concentrated smell. What is it going to take for this to stop? Val.
Yeah.
And did she call our Mayor Cavallo?
Yes, she did. She called me afterwards. You know, Felicia, when we were contacted by a Mr. Walton in the community and invited to come to their community meeting because he said, you guys have got to fight. You need to come here and see what we're living with, and it'll make you fight even harder. And he told me that the meeting was being called by this county councilwoman, Valerie Poindexter, so I looked her up. And I didn't want us to go without, checking, make sure it's okay with them. And as soon as we connected, she took my call, and she said, oh, my God, please come. Yes, of course. Our meetings are public. You're more than welcome. And I told her, well, we'd like to film some of it because we want to bring it back and share with our mayor, because the dairy here told the mayor it's not going to stink and there's not going to be a problem with odor. She goes, oh, my God, Bernard, did they tell that to Bernard? And I said, yes, they did. She said, I know your mayor personally. I'm going to call him myself.
And when was this?
This was last Tuesday.
Okay, so recent.
Yep. And so she called me late at night. She said, Bridget, is this you? I said, yes, Val, it's me. She said, I just have to tell you, I talked to Bernard, and we talked a long time, and you're right. They told him it's not going to stink, and I told him, Bernard, they lie. And I told him what we live with here in our community almost every day, every night. So many people with headaches, burning eyes. You just don't even want to eat in your house. She said, it is such a terrible odor to live with. So I told Bernard, do not believe them. And then she told me, so come. Take your pictures. And so we went over, and with Carol's help, because he is a good, he has an operation.
A lot of capacity.
Yeah, EnviroWatch. He is an environmentalist, superb, and he exposes a lot of dumps and illegal spills. And so we know he would know how to do this. And so he came and he filmed the meeting, he filmed the dairy, and he's right now working with his resources to make a YouTube video that we'll put on friendsofmahalapu.org so everybody on our island can witness what's happening to those poor people on the Big Island. And for us, Felicia, it's what we've been telling our county council and our mayor. You don't want this for the people on Kauai because it'll impact the whole island.
It's a big risk.
It is a big risk.
Felicia?
And it's our water. Yeah.
Felicia, when I was over there, I met several people that gave me their stories. And one gal, her husband died 3 months ago, and of cancer, diagnosed on Friday, died on like Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually go down into the gulch for opi, and they go down into the gulch to, pick herbs and what have you.
They grow vegetables in there, she said, too, yeah.
And they grow, yeah, right, in this gulch, which
has the dead animals pouring into it in the manure.
But they didn't realize that.
Her daughter told her that she saw dead cow parts in the gulch by their house. They had to have come down from that pit through the gulch, under the road, and then down.
Yeah, it all empties into the ocean right below the community.
Wow.
Yeah. And then,
well, you know, the coming, if I could add something here real quick, look at the commonalities here, and the people on Kauai should be holding Friends of Mahalalelepu in high esteem, because keep in mind the state is at both sites now. We know that. They've conducted inspections. How is it that these things could occur when you have the regulatory body there with evidence showing? So without, we wouldn't be here talking about this today in this vein if it were not for the public having to do it themselves. And that's just not right. And so that's what I would encourage all of you to get in there and support Friends of Mahalalelepu and the Ohokala, because it's an injustice, and the state is aware of it. The state is at the scene, and they're doing, in my opinion, in my description, covering up what should be automatically citations issued and shut down that dairy, especially Ohokala.
And to hear the testimony in court from the Department of Health today, just absolutely skirting their responsibilities. So I do want to give an applaud to Judge Randall Valenciano, who said, you know, he pushed them hard, saying,
he said, I can't believe you're backing away the way you are. If you're not, if he said, if you're not doing more than you are, why do we have a Department of Health? What is your function if not to regulate and take care of this problem? And I will say, to Carol's point, the dairy here, the proposed site, was actually studied by the Department of Health again. They didn't tell the public, but they came here March 2nd and did what they call a special run. And this goes to your last caller, the woman from the boat. They tested the water at 12 locations. They started above the dairy site. They went to 6 or 7 locations on the dairy site, all the way down to the ocean, testing what's running through the Waiopili. And they found the greatest contamination, the highest bacteria levels, are right in the center of the proposed farm site. So to say that it is something the public is doing is not right. It's not true. None of us are on that farm site.
Right. So I just want to thank all of you for what you're doing on this, and that I know that this isn't a done deal, but when we're going to be speaking about a couple of other issues on the show today, and really citizen activism is very important. So what we saw in the court today, the court actually functioned.
Yes. And what was the decision? Wrap that up again. What happened?
The decision,
and where do we go from here?
Okay, the judge granted the summary judgment motion and said there can be no further development of that site of any measure. In other words, every permit or approval that's been granted thus far is, as of today, in his words, hereby revoked. That means it's undone. And they have to complete their environmental impact assessment, their EIS.
They have to start over.
They have to start over. They have to do it, and they have to put all the data before the Department of Health or any agency for which they're seeking a permit. And Carol's right. It was good news today when the Department of Health was told, you're out there to protect us, and if you're not protecting us, why are you there? Mm-hmm. And we are a public group. Friends of Mahalalelepu is a 501c3 organization, and we are really a grassroots community. We're now helping Ohokala. They're getting organized. But we shouldn't really have to do this job. Mm-hmm. We do have regulators that should be doing this job, Marshall.
And it shouldn't have to be after the fact. And Scott Enright,
yes,
when he was over here listening to the Friends of Mahalalelepu, he said, wow, if every community was like your community, Hawaii would be a very different place. And you know, it's not to stereotype, but Kaloa and Poipu have people who have typically long, successful careers and are well educated. Is that fair to say? I mean, it's a group of people who have a little bit more capacity than some of the other communities that just get run roughshod. And it is a 3-year dragged down hard battle for you guys, and every day there was a lot of tears in that courtroom today. It is so hard to do it. So in your case, this was proactive, and in a lot of the other cases where people are fighting, they didn't know.
They didn't know. They don't have the financial wherewithal to fight.
No, and they said
Ocala is a very poor neighborhood.
Yeah, so they didn't know, and they're told it's going to be helpful, and they don't want to make problems.
Right, and they're being nice to the dairy because they think the dairy will be a good neighbor.
Yeah, that's what they said. They believed them when the dairy told them it wouldn't smell when they ramped up 3 years ago. They met with the community. They said, we're state-of-the-art, high technology. You're not going to smell it. We're not going to bother you. It won't impact your quality of life. And the postmistress there said, why did we believe them? She said, I guess it's because we just want to think people are usually good. And, you know, we want to be good neighbors. But she said, now we've had meetings with them twice a year for the last few years, and nothing they promise us is coming out. It's just, it's getting worse and worse.
And I want to acknowledge that, like, when people stand up and work against, they're almost ridiculed in the paper, in the press.
I know.
All kinds of talk stink happens, and no pun intended in this stinky topic, but it is, you know, there people are shamed, and then we've seen a lot of really racial slams. I'm even going to say it on the radio because I went to an event at a white person's house, and I saw being passed out these shirts that said, I prefer a pig or a cow over a howley any day, in like 4-inch tall letters, or maybe 3-inch.
I choose a pig or a cow
over a howley any day. And I think all of us H-word people were pretty good about it. Nobody really seemed to get all anxious or upset. But it really bothered me that I happened to walk past where, I'm not going to say who was giving them out, but I happened to walk past seeing where it was given out, and to be playing a divisive racial card like that and turning it into a derogatory racial issue. And I just want to acknowledge that the community that has put so much energy into Friends of Mahalapu have done it at great personal sacrifice. It's kind of taken over your lives.
It has.
I want to thank you for it, and I just acknowledging that. So
thank you.
And the community gets a shout out too, because I will tell you that the people who live on the South Shore have come up with over $400,000 so far to help us fight this fight. And it was expensive to mount the Clean Water Act case, but you know, Felicia, by doing that, we got an order that from the judge that required, she mandated that they open up the site to us and let our scientists in, and we got to do an inspection. We got to learn that there's springs on the site. We were able to better appreciate the hydrology.
We got to see the affluent pond that they dug.
Without permit, and lied about. They denied they'd
done
it.
And they hit the water table.
Yeah, they hit the water table at 2 feet. So there's a lot of problems with that site. And so far, because we've been fighting in court with the federal case, and then the Hyatt had the state case, fortunately for Kauai, the cows aren't here. Unfortunately for the Big Island, they're trying to now unwind and fix a terrible, terrible problem. And they have over 1,200 cows at that dairy right now. And I don't know how they're going to begin to wind it down, but I do know that the wastewater branch chief is somebody that can shut it down. I do know that the state can take action, and I really sincerely hope they do.
Well, I thank you all for what you've done with this, and just the powerful diligence that's happened. And I'm putting gratitude out to the Hyatt, actually, for hiring those rock star women, Lisa and Lisa. Yay, women! Rah! You know, you're a lawyer too, Bridget, but
not practicing.
Okay, two very, very smart women put a good case right there, effectively, and so it just takes all parts of it. Usually, a big resort isn't what is normally the ally of the people, but I thank you guys for, and everybody who's listening who has put in a personal sacrifice, because I know that $400,000 has not come easy, And it has been a real point of hardship for many in that community, and that takes that kind of capacity sometimes to fight things.
We have to thank Surf Rider Foundation, too.
Yes.
The Blue Water Task Force.
Carl Berg.
Carl Berg, a shout out to him, for doing all the water testing when we needed a baseline and finding out how bad the Waiopili is.
Yeah. Yes, and nobody knew that until then.
And he stayed on it, and he got the state on it, made them come and test. And their tests confirmed what he'd found. And, Felicia, some big news.
Okay.
Just yesterday, the State Department of Health did issue its every 2-year report of which streams and water bodies in the state are sufficiently polluted with either turbidity or bacteria or both. And if it's chronic, you know, they go on what's called an impaired water body list, and it's a federal requirement. Every state in the United States is required to do this every 2 years to inspect and identify, and the Waiopili now is officially on the list as an impaired water body.
Wow.
And that's huge. It's called a 303D list.
It's a game changer.
Is that kind of like being a brownfield site but water?
Yeah, kind of. And what happens
is
it puts it on a special list of you got to take care of her. She's sick.
You can't pollute it anymore.
And you can't pollute her anymore. So,
no nepeties.
Yeah.
So you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Carol, I'm going to say warm aloha to you. Thank you for all that you do. Is he still there? Okay. He's gone. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man and Second Skin Naturals.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Second Skin Organics Hawaiian Mosquito Shield. Safe and effective. Protecting you and your ohana since 2001. Kauai grown, GMO free, sustainable organic agriculture based solutions. Uamau ke'ea o ka'aina I ka pono. More information on their global mission and vision for Hawaii at secondskinorganics.com.
From now until the start of our spring membership drive on April 27th, we encourage you to participate in our Early Bird Drive. All Early Bird Drive contributors will be entered into our Early Bird Drawing for a chance to win either a 4-foot-tall monkey pod ku tiki or a ni'ihau shell lei with matching earrings set in a koa frame from Hawaiki Oceanic and Tribal Art Gallery, located in Hanalei Center. Mahalo nui to Hawaiki Oceanic and Tribal Art Gallery for their generous donation to our Early Bird Drawing winner. Our goal for this drive is $70,000. Help us get there by making a sustaining or one-time donation today. For more information on these incredible Early Bird Drawing prizes and to donate securely online, visit kkcr.org or call 826-7774.
Mana oe aloha, noe kalanie, he kupa nohe kamana kamavailu alanie, he homana homauno kalania naole, mana oe aloha, aloe, aloe, aloe.
Please join us at the Prince Kuhio Luau celebration held on March 25th at Koloa Landing Resort. Doors open at 4:15 p.m., show from 5 to 8. Featuring Halau Kale Mokihana Ole Na'ala, Nahomana O Kawaikini, and music by Nohoku Hanohana Award-winning 2016 Group of the Year Mauna Lua, along with a luau buffet and a silent auction. Tickets available online at www.kawaikini.com, KAWAIKINI.com, or call 808-378-4256. Mahalo.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. And that has been quite exciting. Was for me, it was like I felt like being in a TV show or something. You know, it's rare when you really see the court moving in action in a powerful way.
Was the courtroom packed?
No. It was probably a third full, mm-hmm. but didn't matter. It still made a difference. And so that's great. So we're going to be moving on now. And so I just want to reintroduce my guests, two of whom are new in here. But Hannah Apricot from Permaculture Magazine North America has been in really for the whole show, sort of observing and listening and learning. And so, you know, feeding into this program as we go on, we'll hear bits about resilience, because that's the arc that we need to go in, is how do we have a community that actually works. And I have Carl Imperato in here. He's one of our fearless board members of KKCR. Thank you, Carl, for the effort that you put in on that. He's nodding. It's radio. You have to say you're welcome or something.
I'm shy.
Okay. And Carl, you are also Hanalei Haena Community Association
president. Right.
And you are also on the board of Hanalei Watershed Hui.
Right, the Hanalei Watershed Hui and the Limu Coalition.
Okay, so you do a lot of things. You're a very super active community member, and we have nurse practitioner Margie Maupin in here, who has helped in many, many areas. And so when we're looking at that arc of resilience, we're going to be bringing in two more topics. One of what we were just hearing, and for the listener who might have just piped in, sometimes the courts come in and help us out. What the courts really called out in the case today that was the Hyatt, and it was a summary judgment with the Hyatt and Hawaii Dairy Farms and the Department of Health, is that the Department of Health really isn't doing their job, and they're kind of, the whole system is letting Hawaii Dairy Farms circumvent the issue. I mean, the process, the public process. And what I'm going to be moving on to are two different pieces here. One of the first things I'm going to bring up, but Margie, I'm going to mention what yours is too, and we're going to be weaving these things together, is the Princeville Lodge. I see that the Garden Island announced it today. I saw it. We've been knowing about it lurking in the background for, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks. There had been a big development proposed for the Hanalei Ridge, a much, much bigger development. But this is an 80-unit luxury hotel cascading down the ridgeline into Hanalei Bay, right in the view plane of all the people in the community down there, in a time when, I'm just going to say it honestly, like, I love visitors. Visitors are important. But we seem saturated. It took me not too long ago, 35 minutes to get from the pavilion to KKCR. Should take less than 10 minutes. So we have Hanalei rush hour. Even we don't seem like we even have any non-peak times. So I guess they're now calling themselves G70, but Group 70. It's the same organization that's putting the dairy together is putting this. And Pierre Omidyar, he just owns the land here. He was putting in the last piece. Carl's nodding his head. So, Carl, do you want to take us into that a little bit? And then, Margie, in a little bit, we'll be talking about what's happening on the west side. Margie lives on the west side, and where we deal with the Department of Health and the government regulatory agencies and pesticides. So, Carl, tell us a little bit more about the Princeville Lodge and what's happening there, and how does the community association feel about it?
Yeah, sure. You know, maybe I could put this into context too, because in the big picture, this year at least, Hanalei feels like it's particularly under siege.
Why is that? It's so crowded. It's unbelievable.
Well, right. Well, first of all, you know, we've got a general plan that's being done, and it refuses to acknowledge the reality of what's been going on. We've had in the last 6 years more than a 25% growth in tourism on the island. And so when you ask the question, why is it difficult to get out of Hanalei now, the only thing that's changed in the last few years is basically 25% more tourists. And, of course, tourism is the lifeblood of the economy, and it's an important thing. But the question is, how much is too much? How much threatens our resilience? How much threatens our disaster evacuation capability? But the general plan basically is trying to ignore that, saying that, well, in the next 20 years, the tourism growth rate will only be less than 1/11 of what it has been for the last 5 years. So we've got that fight brewing here to try to get some reality and planning. We've got the a fight basically over Hanalei commercial boating and commercial water sports instruction. That's popped up. You know, the communities fought for close to 40 years to basically get a balance between the amount of commercial development in Hanalei Bay and preserving our rural character. And finally, I've been involved for 10 years. Between 2006 and 2011, we finally managed to get the state to put in boating rules that basically acknowledged what the county said in 1992 and limiting the number of commercial boats and commercial boating to passengers. It took 5 years to get that done, till 2011. It took 5 more years, literally, till last summer to get the county rules in place. And now there's no time to really do much about it, because what Dobor has done, that Dobor is the
Division of Boating.
Boating and Ocean Recreation. It's
Aquatic Recreation. Uh-huh.
Ocean Recreation. It's part of the DLNR.
Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Thank you. And basically, they've come out with proposals to eliminate the caps on the number of people who can go out in commercial boat tours and for surf school instruction. So we've got that battle on our hands. And then we've got this big battle now coming up for the Hanalei Ridge. People might remember that it was literally 5 years ago, in 2012, when Pierre Omidyar, founder of eBay, who owns the land on the ridge above the Hanalei River.
And the Hawaii Dairy Farm.
That's right. when he basically came out with a proposal to develop a pretty large development there, there was a hotel as part of the development, which we've gone onto the fish pond next to the Hanalei Ridge. But the major, major concern that people had is that he planned to basically condoize the land, as it were, CPR is what we call it, and basically break that up into, along the ridge, 25 lots, which would then be developed with transient vacation rental mansions and all. The community was in an uproar about that, and basically the largest meeting I've ever seen at Hanalei School in November of that year, between 500 and 800 mm-hmm. people came out and said, no, we don't want this. 6,000 signatures collected and all. And so this whole process, I think, went back into gestation for a while. Maybe Mr. Omidyar didn't want to fight a two-front war because he had the dairy on his hands as well. But that's gone off to the side. And what's happened now, though, is that Jeff Stone, who is the person who controls the development for most of Princeville, has an option on the Omidyar land to basically develop something on it. According to him, he's got until the end of the year to get his permits, and then he would have an option to buy the land from Mr. Omidyar. So we're calling this the Omidyar Stone Project, because Mr. Omidyar is still got Kuleana for that land. Mr. Omidyar is still involved, and we shouldn't let anyone off the hook on this. Now, what's being proposed is an 80-room hotel or a lodge. And arguably, it's smaller than the most recent proposal from 5 years ago. But also arguably, it's much bigger in terms of the impact on the ridge itself than anything that's ever been built there. Back in the 60s and 70s, we had the Hanalei Plantation Hotel up there. But only a small number of the cottages came down along the ridge. So if you wanted to ballpark it, you know, maybe 20,000 square feet of development along the Hanalei Ridge then. Under Mr. Omidyar's proposal, well, that might have been 100,000 or 150. But nonetheless, under Mr. Stone's proposal, it's looking like possibly 60 or 70,000 square feet of development. So it's better than the worst case, but it's a lot more than we've ever seen. And in having met with him, because we're always seeking some win-win solutions here, we've basically expressed the concern that our major issue of the most of the people in the community that have discussed this is to preserve Hanalei's character, its beauty, its viewplane. When you're out at Black Pot, when you're at the Hanalei Pier, you shouldn't have to see a line of development along the ridgeline, which makes the place look more like Laguna Beach, for example. And I guess on the one hand, to his credit, Mr. Stone is saying, you won't see any of this. It's going to be hidden by trees. It's small scale. It's less than it has than previous proposals. But on the other hand, you know, we've kind of been there and done that. We know that when you have beautiful views, that planting trees in front of them doesn't last very long. The trees mysteriously die because people who are in those hotels want the views outwards. And we've also seen artist renderings, which basically look more like French impressionistic pictures, in which you wouldn't really know you were even standing at Black Pot. Everything is so small.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall. You're hearing Carl Imperato, who is the president of the Hanalei Haena Neighborhood Association, or Community Association, and discussing the proposed development of Princeville Lodge on the ridgeline there in Hanalei, looking over Hanalei. So where are we at in terms of the process?
So we're at the, well, that's an interesting question, and here's why. What the current developer is trying to claim is that the permits that were issued for a project that failed in 1980 are all valid, and that basically he can move forward with just minor modifications to those permits. Now, the way things work around here, two of those permits are indeed valid in perpetuity, but the most important of those permits, the special management area use permit, which is the one where there are usually the most conditions, because that's the permit that basically has a lot of criteria about preserving viewplanes, preserving coastal resources, and all of that. In 1986, the planning director sent a letter to the previous developer saying that that permit had expired. Nonetheless, the current developer, Mr. Stone, is saying that that permit is valid and that all he will need is some minor modifications to that. So they plan, as I understand, to move forward with that in a few weeks, and we will probably have some sort of battle over the process. Will there be a new EA?
Environmental assessment.
Or will this be something that relies on that what was done in 1980? Will this be a Turtle Bay, for example?
You know, I was wondering, what would a win-win look like to you? Mm-hmm. What is something that could come to keep the community happy?
Yeah. Now, this is an 18-acre piece of land here, and to the extent that one took a number of the units that were proposed for the western tip of that land, basically, the part that's directly across from Black Pot Beach Park, and moved them further up the river, mm-hmm. whereas nothing mm-hmm. is proposed right now, that would be a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Better yet, an alternative would be to CPR that land with a limited number of lots, but allow the development to be, again, upriver, and put the downriver land that's visible from for the community into conservation.
And is that still in the same ownership, or is that Harry Ho's land up there?
All that land is owned at this point by Pierre Midyard,
okay.
that we're talking about, that 18 acres.
That further up the ridgeline.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So there's room to do other things. Arguably, it would be a less profitable project. I mean, the best views are obviously down towards the point. But you know, it becomes a question of balance once more between accepting a certain amount of development, a certain amount of change, but having it done in a way that's sensitive to meeting the community's needs. So we've been trying to broach those issues with the developer, and we'll see where we go. But right now I've got to say I'm pessimistic, because not only do we have this problem coming up about what kind of process are they going to go through. Will they go through a full permitting process? 3 weeks ago, the planning director granted the project an exemption from having to comply with the county's shoreline setback
laws.
Wow,
yeah, yep, uh-huh.
Now, this came about because 2 years ago, when a bill was before the county council to update the shoreline
mm-hmm. We were
bill,
both there.
Right. Well, the current developer's lawyers were on a committee that was working on that, and two special purpose exemptions were put into the law, mm-hmm. which, amazingly enough, one of them got taken advantage of here. So we're in the process now as part of the community groups to basically, not through the community association, but through some other community groups, to appeal that. Mm-hmm. And hopefully an appeal will be successful at the Planning Commission, and if not that, through the courts.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was just going to ask. Is there a Planning Commission here in Hawaii like there is in California to really deal with these coastal developments?
And we do have a Planning Commission. A challenge that I watch is that this is two-year appointments. Sometimes they end up, people will extend for 4 years, but these people are volunteers. They get probably 1,000 pages every 2 weeks to be going through. And these well-funded landowners, they can just, outlast the institutional memory of both the Planning Department and the Planning Commission. I want to congratulate you, Carl, for being really on it with your homework and being there and speaking on these issues and calling it out. But it is worrisome when people can be specially picked, like segueing for a second. Tomorrow I will be at the county council meeting, and I noticed that we've had a housing committee, affordable housing committee, for a few years going on, and that's going to get extinguished and a brand new one is being proposed, and it looks like that's mostly developers on it. So, you know, there's not going to be continuity to what we had to where we're going, and that's an example of the type of maybe conflict of interest. I don't want to be putting that necessarily on that housing group, but, you know, when we're working on that.
Now, it seems that it is difficult for community interests to come to the forefront before many of the commissions.
It takes, like with the last group that we had, when they've all hawked their houses, literally, because some of them have put up a lot of money, and it's, you know, on fixed incomes and things, it's not so easy to do that. And so it takes that kind of financial capacity to go against these multimillionaire organizations. And so we have an inverse bell curve of normal people up here. You know, we have very rich and then the people who are struggling. So it's a big challenge.
But it's such a testament to how much this land, the Aina, all of this means to the people, that they're willing to do that and go against these Goliath corporations. And it's really such an example for the rest of the world. And I know that the rest of the world does look to Hawaii to see what's happening. And so these struggles really do set example to other places.
They set some important examples. Thank you for acknowledging that, especially with your role with your magazine that is about resilience.
Right. And just as with the dairy farm, there are, you know, some key individuals who have worked on these issues up here on the North Shore for literally 30 to 40 years, and people like Barbara Robeson, Carol Wilcox, Maka'ala, Kamoana, Karen Diamond.
It's their whole lives,
right?
Basically.
And it's an honor to be in their company. One thing I'll have to say, though, is that a lot of these people are over 60 years old, and it's a challenge.
And time for the next generation to step up and learn from these people and all the knowledge that they've gained.
And some of the next generation certainly has stepped up, and I know Haley Ham Young, Giorgio, is an example of one of the people who has really put a focus on the Hanalei Ridge. And when you talked about having, you know, probably 800 people at that meeting, I would say half of them were young adults and their children.
Right.
Excellent.
And Margie is in here with us. I'm going to blend these issues a little bit here because they both are citizen movements. And actually, on the North Shore, some of the people who have been the most vocal about the Hanalei Ridge of the young ones have also been very vocal. You live in Kalaheo, correct? But you have worked in Waimea. You can't nod. You have to say yes.
Yes.
I got these people nodding on the radio. It doesn't work. So, and what you have put to your own exhaustion to some degree, I think that's fair to say, you have worked and worked and worked really hard because you've worked with clients that are ill very possibly from the pesticide challenge. Thank you for coming up today. What is your biggest point for today?
Thank you for having me. My biggest point is to bring up the good neighbor policy as far as...
So tell the listener who doesn't know what that is.
The Good Neighbor Policy was put together by the Department of Agriculture and the companies, the agrochemical companies. And it has several different efforts. Pre-pesticide application notification of registered use pesticides to schools, hospitals, and medical clinics. That's one of the things that they do. Post-pesticide application reporting of restricted use pesticides on a monthly basis, a month after they've been sprayed. Minimum buffer zones for schools, medical facilities, residential properties, and waterways. And, yeah, that's about it.
What is that buffer zone?
Buffer zone is 100 feet. Buffer zone of 100 feet is probably a sneeze. In California, the average buffer zone around this the Central Valley where fruits and vegetables are grown and pesticides are used is 1 mile. Mm-hmm. And at 4 miles, they are even starting to see changes in children's cognition and other health problems. Mm-hmm. So they're considering increasing that buffer zone. So the Good Neighbor Policy has not helped me at all as a healthcare provider. And I'm wondering who it's helping. I haven't talked to anyone that says, yeah, it's very useful. One reason being, when I looked for February, a month later, now into March of February, what did they spray? How much did they spray? Who sprayed it? It's still not there for February. I looked a week ago. Maybe it is now. But if I'm getting that information a month or 6 weeks later, and I have a patient coming in who's obviously been poisoned, who can't stand the light, who was actually dropped off by the companies at the lobby, they didn't come in with them. They left them to struggle their way into the clinic.
Are you talking about employees?
Yes.
Really?
Employees, farm workers.
So what company?
All the companies.
All the companies bring mm-hmm. employees to yep. medical facilities and yes. drop them off sick.
Yes.
So those companies would be BASF, Syngenta, Pioneer, and Dow?
Yes. So they would drop them off. I wouldn't see them. I wouldn't see who dropped them off. I would see a stumbling person coming in, holding their head, keeping the light away from their face, difficulty breathing, feeling very dizzy, slow speech. And I cannot find what pesticide they've been exposed to. So I don't know how to test. I don't know how to treat. It's of no use to me at all. So I would call the Department of Health immediately after I rushed them to the emergency room and tell them what was going on. And I would also call the Department of Agriculture. And I was told that only the patient could file a report, not the primary care provider, which is what I am. And even when I asked about a patient who went into a coma, I was told wait for the patient to get out of the coma and then they can report, which to me is a form of intimidation. These people are poor. They're people of color. They're not used to standing up and speaking for themselves. They're afraid of losing their jobs. Their employer has assured them that they would not be put in harm's way. So they don't call. And I recently went to a child symposium on environmental health on Oahu, and I found out that it's a mandated report for me to be calling and reporting this to the Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture. But I was not allowed to. They were not giving me any way of getting that information through.
Wow. You know, and we are making gains in this movement, though. Like, it seems to be, you know, two steps forward, one step back, rather than two steps back, one step forward. I mean, the pendulum has shifted. It's starting to move. I would say a big change is that people now know pesticides hurt your body, what GMOs are. And the pesticide issue is a little bit different than the food issue. I think what's crucial over here is the pesticides more than the food. Tomorrow, Hawaii Representative Cregan, he is reviving this pesticide disclosure bill, which basically got derailed by a voice vote. There was a sleight of hand that happened at the legislature when we finally got this bill that went through that looked at you know, making sure to contain the pesticides in the industry in the way that the joint fact-finding study said it passed the committees, and then they shifted a date on it just so it would go for, it went for a voice vote. So there's no record of how the individual legislators voted. So that is being unaccountable to the people, but it tells you that they're scared of the people. Otherwise, yes, that they would just come out straight and say it. So you don't hide like that if you don't know that what you're doing is wrong. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. And while we are talking about young people, we have two beautiful messages from and about our young people.
This word of the day is brought to you by Nahamana Kawaikini, the students of Kawaikini.
Aloha kākou. My name is Anuhea. The Hawaiian word for today, or huo'olelo no kala, is manini. The spelling is M-A-N-I-N-I. A Hawaiian proverb, or olelo no eau, is kai'a ake kualau I lawe mai'ai. A translation, or unuhi, of this proverb is the fish brought in by the rain at sea. A mana'o nui, or a main idea of the word manini, is the spawn of the manini fish that came to the islands by the millions during the summer months. They were said to come after a shower at sea in the early morning. Mahalo.
Legendary Party of the Year, a benefit concert for Hanalei School. Starry Nights presents the Soft White 60s and DJ Doja at the St. Regis Princeville Resort on Saturday, April 8th. Doors open at 6 p.m., 21 and over. Silent and live auctions with custom items exclusive for Starry Nights. Tickets are limited and available at Hanalei Surf Company, Magic Dragon, Healthy Hut, and online. More information at 647-0188 and Hanalei School on Facebook.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. We are looking at different community concerns. Margie Maupin is in here talking about the Good Neighbor Policy and how important it is that healthcare workers, she's a nurse practitioner,
yes,
have a way to be able to be giving quality service to them. And we also have Carl Imperato in here and Hannah Apricot from Permaculture Magazine of North America. Margie?
I want to mention that the neighborhood Good Neighborhood Policy is not even following its own steps. Pre-pesticide application notification of restricted use pesticides to schools, hospitals, and medical clinics. I've never gotten one call, one email to protect my patients or to know what to treat them with or to know when it was going to happen. I've never had one call. So that's not happening, at least at the hospital, which was just Kauai Veterans Memorial Hospital.
In Waimea.
Yeah. And then I also worked within that hospital at Ho'ola at a community clinic. And same there. We didn't get any calls. So I don't see them even following this.
Well, giving them something that they can do, the House Agriculture Committee chairman, they have a scheduled hearing tomorrow for Senate Bill 804. And as I tell people on the radio all the time, it can be found how to testify at capital.hawaii.gov. That's capital with an O. And if you go in and put SB 804, Senate Bill 804, you know, this is a funding bill, but they've kind of re-angled it to be able to be studying the impacts of chlorpyrifos on pregnant women, which, you know, there's this constant game of chipping away at things, and it might take 5 years to make a difference or get a law passed, sometimes 10. And in the meantime, people might die or be impacted. You know, 10 years can seem like a very long time. So there's a lot of this sense of urgency. And when we're talking about Carl's topic here, if you don't succeed very often, then your community is changed forever. So the waiting game doesn't work for everybody, but there is some stuff underway.
As far as chlorpyrifos, that's one of the chemicals that was used as a nerve toxin during World War II, and it's been found in every air sample study at Waimea Canyon Middle School. and there's been no response to that from the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health.
It's largely been denial.
Well,
actually,
no, they say it's there, but what they say is it's lower levels, so it's not a concern. But when you have lower levels from the time you're a fetus up to the time you're middle school, 14 years old, have they studied that? That's long-term, low-level exposure.
Chronic exposure as opposed to acute exposure. We have a caller. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi. Since it's GMO Awareness Week, just this morning I watched on YouTube a really interesting thing about the health effects of glyphosate.
And which is Roundup,
Yeah, Roundup. Basically, that's the component in Roundup. Well, it kills the bacteria, you know. And what I found out, and this might be good, I wanted to tell the nurse practitioner to go to YouTube and look up Dr. Merkula and his YouTube channel. And he has a playlist on there, and it goes in-depth about how it affects our gut bacteria. Well, our gut bacteria do way more than just, you know, keep us regular and all that. You know, we are made out of bacteria. Well, these bacteria literally make certain amino acids, which our body cannot make on their own. So what this guy talks about is we can't make tryptophan, we can't make phenylalanine, and we can't make tyrosine without these bacteria in our guts. So what has been happening to the children is they eat, you know, GMO'd food, and then they get autism. Autism is like a side effect of that. They get all kinds of diseases, not just autism, but all neurological diseases are controlled by this thing called IGF-1, which is another thing that the Roundup and the glyphosate inhibits your body from getting. And that helps to control blood sugar and regulate insulin, and, you know, it's responsible for making new brain neurons, okay? So IGF-1 protects our brain neurons. When we have a bunch of Roundup glyphosate in our system, we can't protect our brain, so we get brain damage, like lower IQ. Like, children will have lower IQs because of this. You know, so I think, you know, glyphosate, it literally destroys our body's bacteria, so we are no longer able to make tryptophan, which turns into serotonin, which makes the IGF-1, which protects our brain neurons.
So you've been doing your research.
And glyphosate weakens the immune system by destroying our gut bacteria.
So, Margie, do you have some response?
Yes, you're correct about that. Glyphosate acts like an antibiotic in the gut and destroys the bacteria that helps brain development. I remember having a patient, seven-year-old boy, who routinely came in with nosebleeds where he had to be sent to the emergency room. He lived in Kekaha by the Sprain. And they would have to take emergency measures to stop the bleeding. But after years of having this mother and patient, a delightful, delightful patient, young boy, about 6 years old, the mother told me, my son used to be really smart and used to have no hard time learning. And now he's in the middle school and he's having a really hard time learning. He's hitting his head. He doesn't know why he can't do math when he used to be able to. And he's in the school where the chlorpyrifos has been found 5 separate times. And I strongly think that that's a result.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And because the Department of Health would not take a report for me, I kept my own report, my own log, for an entire year of people I thought were ill from pesticide exposure. And it was between 8 and 20 patients a month. And they took the report because I sent it to them. I emailed it to them. I emailed it to the mayor, to the governor. And still, they had no response for that.
Do you think, how many of these patients are then filing reports themselves? Do you have any statistics on that?
For me, for my patients, 1.
Wow.
Yeah, I've actually, and thank you, caller. Thank you
okay.
so much. I have definitely heard from people who actually at one point were super, super champions of the industry, and then they quietly asking questions like, how come I've had colitis since I was 12, mm-hmm. right? You know, that's just one example. People kind of going, well, maybe I am sick. We don't know. What we saw this week with the
pesticides in the pollen, the bee pollen report, at least the way the study was done, it showed flea, tick, something called propranolol or something like that. It's like the flea medication. I have it written down somewhere.
Permethrin, maybe.
No, it starts with an F. It's like, I put it on my Facebook page, but it was in 100% of the hives. And there was only one hive with chlorpyrifos. Carl Berg had done a study on the honey, which the government didn't put him up to doing, but 37% of the hives had glyphosate in it. So there's different elements. Hannah, I want to just hear your knowledge of what you're hearing and what do you see, you know, relative to what you've been on Kauai now for a couple of weeks, and how does that compare to what you're seeing, you know, in North America?
Yeah. Well, a lot of us really consider Hawaii, and I think in particular Kauai, as ground zero for the GMO battle, for the pesticide fights, for really looking at how our health is being directly affected. There's been some great movies coming out, including like Island Earth, which did a lot of filming here on Kauai and talking to some of these people that, they were part of the industry, and then they're seeing the direct health effects on their family and doing the research and realizing, you know, we just have to look to different ways of agriculture. And that's why it's so exciting working with permaculture and seeing there really are solutions, there really are alternatives.
And you said ground zero. Do you want to say what ground zero means? What does ground zero mean to you?
Well, what it means to me is that this is really where the fight is happening now. We're seeing the results. People are being sick. People are having to go to the ER. The honeybees are sick. The pollinators are dying.
So this study that they just finished and put out, they would say no.
Yeah.
They're saying that the honeybees actually came out pretty darn good. You know, there's certainly some hives that have died and they haven't taken the tests in the dead hives.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm just bringing that up as the alternate argument, because when I go and I listen and I try and look for the mindset of the people who feel like, hey, you know, are we really the bad guy? You know, so we didn't, at least the recent test that the government paid for, and it seemed pretty third party, didn't show sick hives.
Okay, good, I guess.
I would say when I was in there, I was like, yay, you know, I mean, I'm not going to like want to feel like I feel relieved to see that's true. Now, whether it is, you know, we can trust it, I mean, that becomes the issue in all these things, you know, it's like, who do you trust?
But also to me, the ground zero means this is the battleground for the people going against these corporations and the Syngenta and Monsanto and all of these huge ones, where you guys are on the ground fighting, where mothers are having their sick children. I mean, we had in our first two issues of Permaculture Magazine from North America, we had scientific articles really looking at the effect of these pesticides on our health. And yes, the increased rates of autism, of obesity, of all of these major health issues that are plaguing all of America. But the statistics and the stories that I've heard directly from people coming out of Hawaii and here on Kauai, it's happening. And it's scary.
And sometimes it's a convergence of more than one element. I think that happens too. And that's why it's hard to really pin one piece. And so, like, I'm somebody who's, like, afraid of my cell phone, right? You know, so I'm like, yeah, I don't want the EMF. How do you know what it is? And maybe it is everything. And I want to pull Carl back in for this too, because I think just stress is a big underlying problem. And so it can be stressful traffic, but the bigger piece of stress
is not being able to afford a home, not being able to know that you can get away with, you know, working, you know, people are working two and three jobs, and they're still just about houseless. And the cycle of poverty that we have that really impacts everybody mm-hmm. is profound. And when I look at these types of development, it actually accelerates it. Do you see something like the Princeville Lodge having a health impact? Or is that a stretch?
Well, I think in the sense that I see a lot of stress in people that they feel that they are not connected anymore to their communities, the places they've grown up. And I see this, for example, when there are meetings to try to improve the situation down at KA.
And at the end of the road.
At the end of the road, because you know, we have upwards of 2,500 people a day visiting the park. Jeez. And that's certainly unmanageable. And community groups have been working with the state on this to basically cut the number down to 900. And there's been a lot of work that goes into that. But what happens when we go to public meetings, there are people who obviously haven't had the time to become involved in all of these things because they're working two or three jobs and they're raising a family. But there's a gut reaction from people to come to those meetings and just lash out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the stress associated with feeling that you're being pulled away from your own community, or it's being taken away from you. Mm-hmm. And when we see something like this new project come up for the Hanalei River Ridge, that is going to exacerbate that, because what do people have when they go to Black Pot? They have the beauty of the area. They don't have at this point the problem of looking up at the ridge and seeing a string of hotels.
And extreme wealth.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes looking at extreme wealth is painful. Mm.
So I think that there is a connection to increasing stress when you have these kinds of developments, where people then feel it's just one more nail in the coffin of feeling that they are not alone in the world. They're part of a community. The community is being taken away. So that, you know, people can argue, well, why are we in this area so concerned about views? I mean, there are certain important issues. Housing affordability, health issues associated with the pesticides, GMOs, everything else. But there's a psychological issue of, you know, feeling that you have a community you've grown up in, it's you're part of it, and someone else is taking it away by putting these kinds of projects in.
I think it is even more profound for the people with the ancestral heritage here of Hawaiian ancestry, because what we're seeing, and I'm certainly being able to experience when I go to all these different meetings where we're learning and looking at original documents, it's not an exaggeration to say that Hawaii is an occupied nation. The thing is it's occupied. So, you know, I sit there and I see both of those pieces. But, you know, we're seeing this really profound increased marginalization of people. And I feel bad. And something I was looking at, and I will testify again at the Kauai general plan update on the 28th. So it's a week from today. And it's really important. This is almost the last day to be getting input in before the Planning Commission, I believe, is that, you know, everybody's so polite when we write that plan. At some level, we're not being honest with ourselves in the conversation, because, as you pointed out, it doesn't really show how far the visitor industry is growing. And then our two main legs of the economy is the visitor industry and it's land development. So, and visitors, like, I'll own it. I came on vacation 34 years ago for 2 weeks, and I'm basically still here. And so as we bring people over, they're kind of like the bait. And many people then buy the housing when they come on vacation, and they really have no idea that they are going to become part of a problem. But when we have our two main economic drivers also is like a conveyor belt of people off the island, we have a real problem. And I think for people with a history here where they have an indigenous connection with the land, is very overwhelming to be a minority, an extreme minority population in your own community.
And I think that really stays with people generationally. You know, it happens to a lot of indigenous communities that are occupied, that even if things are maybe a little bit better for your generation, the struggles that your ancestors have gone through, and then, yeah, when you can't afford your home, where you can't pass it on to your children, where you see all these big developments coming in and the fields being sprayed with poisons, yeah, it affects people's psychology, that then affects their health, and then makes them unable to fight against it. And yeah. I think that's part of the system approach.
And then they end up in the diaspora like the rest of us. You know, our ancestors have been displaced from their community, or we have been displaced from our community. It's like then we become cultural orphans. And then I think it's easier when you land in a place that you don't have history in to just try and assimilate as whatever way will work. So you take the job that will work out, you maybe have the funding for it, and so unintentionally, the new wave helps undermine what's here. And we're almost to the top of the hour pretty soon. Jazz with John is coming up at 6 o'clock. He's great, and he's in here. We love you, John. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, we can't help our history, our ancestral, the color of our skin. All we can help is what we do and the reverence that we have for each other, the battles that we're willing to fight, the lessons that we're willing to learn about resilience, about building community, about loving each other and loving the planet. I mean, we really can come together and make a positive impact and see if we can hopefully reverse this kind of hell in a handbasket that the planet seems to be on.
And we live in one of the most beautiful places on that, you know. That's the one thing I have to look at when I'm outside. It's like, oh my gosh, still gorgeous. I want to give each person a chance to really say their mana'o before we go. And Marshall usually gets squeezed out. Marshall, do you have any thoughts on what we're talking about?
I just want to thank you all for coming in. What a great discussion. And last hour, too. Thank you, Felicia, for pulling us all together to chew these things over.
You're welcome. And Carl, your thoughts?
Well, to end on a positive note, there are a lot of challenges ahead of us, but let's always remember what things would have been like if not for the work that people have done to try to protect things in the past. Mm-hmm. I look up here in Hanalei, you know, we would have a set of two-lane bridges mm-hmm. everywhere. Hanalei Bay would be a marina with 50 tour boats going out. There would be far more transient vacation rentals and far less housing. There are so many areas where we sometimes dwell on our losses on a day-to-day mm-hmm. basis. But if we stand back and say, if not for the fight, where would we be today? And we're a lot better off.
Margie?
There's something about the good neighbor policy. That's mostly what I was interested in talking about today. That the Department of Agriculture has already committed to making this a statewide program. And I'd like to have anybody call me, email me, Facebook me to let me know if they are using that program to protect their families or protect their communities or their patients, and how to use it, because I haven't been able to use it at all, and I don't think anybody's using it. And so why are we spending the money and time to make it a statewide program? But I do want to end with, I believe that this consciousness is rising. More people are wanting to know, what is my family being poisoned with? What are the side effects? What can we do? I'm seeing more of that now, too. People are standing up and wanting to be empowered.
Do you have a contact number or address that you ask people to contact you? How do they get a hold of you?
They could call me, 635-2082.
Thank you. And we have another caller, and then so I'll end with you, Hannah. Aloha, caller. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Aloha. I wanted to call back and say some solutions for... Okay, so since I just found that out this morning, then if somebody has these deficiencies in their gut, they can take a probiotic to help cure it, high-quality probiotic with multi strains in higher doses. They can replace those amino acids. You can go to papayas, you can, or any health online, whatever, find some high-quality tryptophan, or it's called 5-HTP. You can take methionine, or you should take, really, ultimately,
SAME, S-A-M with a little E, because that will help you detox and protect. If you're living on the west side and you're constantly breathing the poison, or if you're working for these companies, you have to stop it. You know, you have to stop that job for sure and move away, or have this GMO company go away and become hemp fields. And that's the other thing. I heard people are like thinking marijuana is bad and stuff. Well, it's a neuroprotector. It protects your brain. What kills your brain is the GMO, and they're like going to prosecute medical marijuana.
Caller,
and stuff.
Caller. Thank you so much. I'm at the end of my show. I'm at the end of my show. So thank you so much. I'm at the end of my show. Aloha. And it's also, you know, these companies can adapt and work fine. Okay, Hannah, a last thought from you, and then we're going to hear the county council report.
There's so many thoughts I'd like to share. So I thank that last caller for really looking into the solutions. And that's what permaculture is about. It is a system of solutions that is built on resilient practices and things that we can all do to be better stewards of this planet. And I just want to thank you, Felicia, and all the people of the islands who are doing so much here to protect this amazing place that you have. I encourage people to check out our website, permaculturemag.org. We really try to share a lot of these amazing stories and solutions from all around the world. And, you know, on Facebook, I did a quick little post that I was going to be on here today talking about the dairy issue. And it was amazing.
I know.
The plethora of solutions out there, you know, from using mushroom inoculated mats to clean up the water, different ways of planting trees, different crops that could be used. It's really exciting.
I was really touched with all the suggestions that came in there. This particular dairy is a little bit too concentrated for that. But what did bring out is that if people want to be raising livestock,
there's ways to do it right. There's
ways
to do everything we want to do right. And so that it's good for the people, good for the planet, and good for the future. And that's what it's all about, and that's what permaculture is. And thank you.
And thank you for taking an interest in Kauai. So,
yes.
Jazz with John is up at the top of the hour. This has been Felicia and Marshall from Kauai Soapbox. I thank you, Carl, Margie, Hannah, and Marshall. So here is the county council report. A lot of things going on tomorrow, so I'm going to be there.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's the county council report for the week of March 20th. There will be a regular council meeting Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. in the council chambers in Lihue. Here highlights in the agenda. The council will interview candidates for the Fire Commission and the Charter Review Commission with terms ending 12/31/2019. The acting county engineer transmits for council consideration a resolution abandoning the Kapa'i Swinging Bridge and granting all rights and responsibilities to and in favor of the Kapa'i Foundation, and this is to preserve, restore, and beautify the Kapa'i Valley area, which includes the Swinging Bridge. And this is resolution number 2017-23. Sharon Lasker, Chair of the Committee on the Status of Women for the County, transmits for Council information Resolution Number 2017-1, supporting the principles of the United Nations Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, which was adopted by the Committee on the Status of Women at its February 15th meeting. See Resolution Number 2017-24. The Director of Finance transmits for Council information supplemental property tax revenue information pertaining to the estimated reduction in real property tax revenues resulting from the home preservation limit and very low income tax relief measures enacted by the county council. The Community Assistance and Veterans Services Committee Chair transmits for Council consideration a resolution establishing an Affordable Housing Special Advisory Committee and repealing Resolution Number 2013-57 Draft 1 and Resolution Number 2014-34, and this is also new Resolution Number 2017-27. The Director of Finance transmits for Council consideration two resolutions relating to a reserve fund and reserve fund policy and a structurally balanced budget for the County of Kauai. And this is Resolution Number 2017-28 and number 2017-29. The prosecuting attorney requests council approval to indemnify the state of Hawaii for the contract 15DJ05 for the Drug Nuisance Abatement Unit between the State of Hawaii Attorney General's Office and the County of Kauai's Prosecuting Office. The prosecuting attorney also requests council approval to apply for, receive, and spend federal highway safety funds from the State of Hawaii Department of Transportation in the amount of $142,589 to be used towards continued funding of a full-time equivalent traffic resources prosecuting attorney, and this is for travel and training. The county attorney requests authorization to spend up to $370,000 for special counsel services to represent the County of Kauai Housing Agency before the State of Hawaii Land Use Commission in order to file petition for the Lima Ola Workforce Housing Project, and this is Resolution 2016-53, and this item is also on the non-public executive session. The mayor transmits his fiscal year 2017-2018 budget message along with a proposed operating budget, capital improvement projects budget, and a schedule of changes and fees. This is proposed draft bills number 2645 and 46. And the proposed fiscal year 2017-2018 real property tax rate, which is resolution number 2017-25. The Office of the County Attorney on behalf of the Council requests authority to approve settlement regarding the claim filed by Daryl Perry, Chief of Police, and related matters, and this is also on the non-public executive session agenda. The Mayor recommends Council approval of a grant of pedestrian access and parking easements from CIRI Land Company conveying easements to the County for the Kalua District. This is a grant of pedestrian access and parking easement that Planning Committee recommended be approved, and this is on their agenda today. The Economic Development and Intergovernmental Relations Committee received for the record from the Director of Economic Development for agenda time to have Scott Enright, Chairperson of the Board of Agriculture, State of Hawaii, Department of Agriculture, make a presentation on the state's bee pollen study. Under resolutions is number 2017-22. Urging the United States Postal Service to continue postal service at the Lihue Post Office located on Wright Street. Bills for second reading include proposed draft bill number 2645 and proposed draft bill number 2646 relating to the operating and CIP budgets. For more information on meetings or meeting archives, visit the county's website. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.
And you are listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, or Kauai's community radio station. And stay tuned for Jazz with John coming up next. Jazz with John is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our underwriters, Tiki and Iki and Halle Girl.
The North Shore has a new place for breakfast. Tiki and Iki, serving breakfast at 7:30 a.m. Also, Sunday brunch, lunch, happy hour, dinner, and late-night dining. Open till midnight. Tiki and Niki, now serving breakfast in the Princeville Center.
Howley Girl Island Suites presents The Tea Room in the gallery located in Kinipopo Shopping Center in Kapa'a, offering full-service high tea and desserts. More information at 808-822-2253.
And a big mahalo for supporting community radio, Kauai's community radio, and Jazz with John. Got an interesting show for you tonight. We're going to do kind of a tribute to one of the great music icons of all times, Mr. Chuck Berry. So stay tuned. Not jazz, but very important music.